Hey, it's Greg Sestero from The Room, and you are listening to Cinema Psycho Show.
Oh, goody, goody, here it comes.
Welcome to The Cinema Psycho Show.
You are interested in the unknown, the mysterious, the unexplainable. That is why you are here.
Oh, my God, don't stop now!
With your hosts, Ryan, John, and Elaine.
Welcome to Cinema Psycho Show, the madhouse for film freaks and film fans of all types. I'm your host, Brian Coddington. Join my fellow co-hosts and filmmakers, John and Lane Woolscroft.
I gave all of your moms a very happy Mother's Day.
Yikes.
Did you give them your Green Hulk?
My incredible bulk.
Your greenie.
Your incredible bulk.
You're greener.
You're greener.
You guys are gross.
Yeah, we are. You're gross.
I can't remember where you're coming up with this stuff.
You're gross with your face.
It must have been all of the sexual puns from last week's Endgame.
A lot of boobs and penis references.
You made a lot of body jokes, my friend.
You know, Aunt Titty May and Kat Dennings' boobs and, you know, Scarlett Johansson's butt. A lot of that stuff.
I wanted to focus
on Scarlett Johansson's boobs because I'm a thoughtful man, but Lane couldn't stop talking about her butt.
Bless this mess is all
Bless
I have to say.
Mess. So we're on episode 138, and it's Mother's Day, folks.
Yay! Happy Mother's Day.
Or it could be the day after.
Mothers.
Or it could be the day before. We don't know when it's going to come out. It might come out Sunday. It might come out Monday.
We don't know
when
you're going to listen to it. You
August.
Know?
Who fucking knows?
Who fucking knows? So, this is our special Mother's Day episode. And in honor of Mother's Day, we figured, why not we review a movie that really shows what a mother should not be?
Yes, this is a cautionary tale.
And as I said last week, it was, for me, it was a choice between either this movie or Flowers in the Attic. Which, Flowers in the Attic,
right.
my wife introduced me to, because I had not been familiar with it. And she's like, you got to watch this movie. It's horrible in terms of just how these kids are treated. And it really was horrible. But this movie is kind of like the granddaddy of all horrible parent films.
Yeah. That's
based
fair.
On a real actress yes. and crazy person, Joan Crawford.
Yeah, yes. Really. I mean, based on a true story, which is like scary to say.
So we're going to be talking about the 1981 film Mommy Dearest. Starring not Joan Crawford because she's dead.
Yep, but starring Faye Dunaway.
Faye Dunaway and a bunch of other people who are no longer famous.
Yes.
Yeah, and a lot of people in this movie are no longer living.
Or also, living. That too. You
know. It came out in 81. I mean, you know, people are going to die off.
That's fair. I mean, I didn't say it was like their fault or bad. I just said it was a thing.
And so I do have a synopsis for this.
Excellent.
Kind of get us going. So based on the book about Joan Crawford, one of the greatest Hollywood actresses of our time, written by her adopted daughter, Christina Crawford. Joan decides to adopt children of her own to fill a void in her life, yet her problems with alcohol, men, and the pressures of show business get in the way of her personal life, turning her into a mentally abusive wreck, seen through the eyes of Christina and her brother Christopher, who unwillingly bore the burden of life that was unseen behind closed doors of the most beautiful house in Brentwood.
This is very well written.
This was written by Jeffrey A. Middleton on IMDb.
Well,
so
good job,
this
Jeffrey.
Is not actually like a professional. It was just someone who contributed this summary. And it really is. That's a solid summary.
I have a quicker one.
Yeah.
Scattershot snuff film. Scatter edited snuff film. Yeah. That's all this is.
You know, really? Yeah. Really? Scatter edited snuff film.
Yeah. Because all it is just like, the movie jumps all over the place and it's just children being abused.
Thank God. That was the first thing I wanted to bring up with you guys. I think that the biggest problem I had with this film, and I had many, but I think the biggest problem that I had was the fact that it wasn't a movie with a plot. It was just vignette after vignette. Like, it was separate scenes that didn't have anything to do with each other. And really, I mean, you could see the abuse, but there was no overarching point either.
I don't think you needed to have an overarching point with it. I think what this was designed to be is really a look at a person who, prior to this book and prior to this movie, were considered Hollywood royalty. Like literally,
sure.
that you know, Joan Crawford was famous. You know, dating all the way back from the 30s and 40s and
20s technically.
And 20s technically. And then, you know, she had won an Oscar for Mildred Pierce. She was in Whatever Happened to Baby Jane. I mean, she was a massive, massive star.
Yeah, she was a big deal. Hugely big deal.
And, you know, one of the cornerstones of actresses who built Hollywood. So this really, for me, is more or less of a biopic on that person, seeing a side of them that we aren't seeing.
Which is funny, though, because she's so infamous now for that abuse. Yes. I feel like it's very synonymous.
It has overshadowed her. Like, honestly, it's overshadowed her. And it is worth noting that, you know, there are some people who knew Joan and who disagree with this depiction of her.
Yes.
Oh, yeah, John, you were talking about that last night.
There are a number of people who've called out Christina Crawford and said that this is untrue.
Yeah.
Yeah, John, do you want to kind of like elaborate on that?
Oh, I mean, Brian kind of hit the point. Yeah, it's like half the people are like, oh, you made all this up for
I don't believe
books.
That.
And then other people are like, no, I saw it. She was fucking horrible.
I'm on the side of more or less believing Christina Crawford rather than, you know, even acknowledging those. Because the way I look at it is it sounds to me like, you know, Joan Crawford suffered from what's now called bipolar disorder. Mm-hmm. You know, like that's literally what this is. It's textbook bipolar disorder.
Right.
And
being Hollywood cuckoo, like Hollywood makes you a
well, that's what I'm saying. It's like you've already got a mental condition and you're going to tack on top of that the stresses of fame and show business on top of it. And it will make you insane. Mm-hmm. So I'm more or less to believe Christina Crawford rather than the people who, you know, maybe were friends with Joan Crawford. Because the way I look at it is Joan Crawford is going to put out, going to put out the veneer of normalcy.
Sure, of course.
And really, someone like Christina, who lived through this, you know, was there every single day, is going to give you a more accurate portrayal.
Yeah, and that's what John was saying last night. He made the point that, like, you don't see people's true faces, unless you're alone with them.
No.
You know, like a child would be, and, like, friends just might not, you know, they just might not know.
And the thing is, some people have come to Christina Crawford's, you know, aid and said, yeah, we knew this was about her. We knew that she was this way. And I think, honestly, Joan's fame kind of precluded those people from doing anything to stop it too.
Yeah.
You know, because they were
servants in the movie are like, you know, she's like hitting them and scalding them and emotionally abusing them. And they're just like, whatever you want, Ms. Crawford.
Well, think about that. That would be today if you had, I can't think of a movie star who would be up to the level of Joan Crawford, but that would be like if you were, you know, Angelina Jolie was acting insane, you know, and beating people up. You
know? I wouldn't be surprised. She seems a little.
I don't know. I don't think we necessarily have movie stars of that caliber anymore.
Yeah,
you know what I mean. Mm-hmm. I think we do and we don't.
I think. Yeah. Well, I think Hollywood's very different now.
It is very different. So this movie starts off with painting a picture of someone who is an absolute perfectionist when it comes to her image. We don't actually see Joan Crawford in the beginning. We see her arm. We see her hands.
Yeah.
We see her daily regimen of getting up at 4 o'clock in the morning, icing her face, unwrapping her face, getting ready to go shoot a movie. And it's great because those little snippets of that montage opening scene really kind of paint a picture of what type of person we're dealing with.
Yeah, I thought that the characterization wasn't a complete failure. I mean, I think they did do a good job of showing a lot of her quirks, a lot of her habits, and like things about her that are important.
Yeah,
but then, you know, it's revealed that she can't have children of her own. She's had like 7 miscarriages.
Oh, well, yeah, what did she that say? Was
she
crazy.
Had, she
7.
Was married to Groucho Marx. Was that it? Was that what she said? I was married to Groucho, and
I can't. Yeah. I just remember. Remember the 7 miscarriages.
She had 7 miscarriages. Yeah. Yeah.
And so she decides to adopt a child, and nobody's like, "Hey, Joan, you're kind of batshit nuts. Maybe you shouldn't have any."
Joan, you're also like busy all the time.
Well, they
Joan.
Do. They do tell her that. Yeah. They do tell her that. They do. She tries to go through a real adoption agency.
But they say she's an unfit mother not because she's batshit nuts, but because of the old sexist.
Well, no one
idea.
Knows that she's batshit nuts. That's a whole thing.
Like, it's a surprise.
You're an actress and you don't have a husband. How could you have a child?
Yeah. So she tries to get a
do you even know how to
through
cook?
The proper channels and like yeah they
do
they
you
basically
even
said
lift, madam
they say you don't have a you've had divorces you don't have a husband you work all the time you know blah 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 yakety schmackety she doesn't get a kid through that Instead, her attorney.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Slash her weirdo friend.
Slash Uncle Greg. Yeah.
Her slammy.
I mean, oh my god.
Her man piece. I mean that's ultimately what he is. You know, arranges to get a baby for her.
Yeah, that's not weird.
Which
or creepy
is really
or upsetting.
Weird.
I called in a lot of favors for this one, Joan.
Do we think that Christina was stolen from her real parents?
Well, the doctors bring.
Was
her
there
in,
a baby you know? Napping ring? I don't
bit.
Know.
Yeah, and at at this point, you know, Joan is loves the baby so much, and we flash forward, as you said, because this movie does have a lot of that.
The transitions are garbage.
There are no transitions.
Yeah.
There are zero transitions in this.
There were times where I was like, wait, that's weird. I don't remember that wall. Oh, we're in a whole new scene.
Yeah, no. John said that like three times last night when we were watching this. He's like, wait, what?
But to be fair, I think this is one of the first kinds of movies that really shows a lifetime of someone. So I don't think they figured out yet how do we communicate all of this. Someone's life.
Yeah.
Well, I'm surprised they didn't have Christina narrated or something. I know people hate narration.
I hate narration. But I hate it.
But I could see it aiding in this part, like in this situation.
So we flash forward in time to like her fifth birthday. And this is where we start to really see the crazy start to come out. You know, we see that, you know, Joan is obsessed with the media and obsessed with getting pictures. So everything is a set, basically. You know, even opening presents is a set for Joan and Christina. Everything has to be arranged. We got to get pictures of her for the studio, blah, blah, blah.
Tons of photos.
You know, tons of photos. And then even like the first moment we get that this woman's a little unhinged is when she says to Christina, okay, pick one present out of all the presents you got and we're going to give the rest to charity.
For my image.
For my image.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And
not
she only got
good,
to keep one present.
For her image. Yes.
That was crazy.
It was really crazy. And that was like the first time you see that this woman is not all there. You know, and then we also get this competition streak that Joan has between her and her daughter that runs the whole entire movie.
Which is really weird.
Which is really strange.
I can't
strange.
Let my kid win
No,
anything.
But it's yeah. She pushes herself to so much perfection. That's why I say this is a bipolar thing. That anxiety that she could be less than perfect, even against her own daughter. You know, why can't you just let your daughter win a swimming race, for God's sake? You know, she can't even do that because of her mental illness, that she has to cheat. And she has to, you know, she says, you know, I'm not going to play with you then because you cheat. You're bigger than me. That's why you win the race. So, you know, and that runs through the whole entire movie. And Joan takes it as someone who's trying to challenge her as, you know, perfect and the main actress, that sort of thing. So, you know, that is also where we first see real abuse.
Oh, yeah.
Too, that swimming scene.
Yeah, because the whole birthday thing is just, it's weird.
And uncomfortable, but not.
No, it's not.
It's just fucking weird.
It's just fucking weird. You know, the swimming race, and we actually, you can even see and hear the moment when it changes. Because up until that swimming race that they have, the music cuts off right as when Joan turns.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was actually a nice
bit. And that's a nice little bit because it's like, this is the point where we're getting into some really horrible stuff. And it really all goes downhill from there.
It's upsetting.
It is really upsetting. And you know,
it wouldn't have been so bad with Benny Hill music, though.
No. What? John.
That's horrible.
Or chasing her around with a stick, you know?
Don't make light of this. But, I'll kill you.
You know, the childhood section takes up a large portion of this film.
It does.
We then cut to a number of scenes in which... you know, one, the first one is really seeing how, you know, Christina deals with her mother's constant barrage of men.
Mm-hmm.
Like
uncles and daddies.
Well, yeah. Like uncles. She breaks up with her her lawyer, Greg.
Brooks Brothers.
Yeah. Brooks Brothers. mainly because of the fact that he's tired of her crazy, too.
Bless.
You shouldn't put your dick in crazy. That's mm-hmm. Elaine's number one rule.
My number one rule.
You said what you don't stick your dick in crazy, right?
I was illustrating a point.
It's true.
Multiple times.
multiple times.
I don't remember this.
But he gets tired of her shit, and just, you know, after one fight in which she complained about the fact that he wouldn't walk with her through all of the crowds of people trying to get autographs with her, and that somehow was a slight against her. Like the woman's nuts.
She's always looking for those moments of, like, when someone's doing something against her, though she's extremely paranoid.
We're kind of ignoring how awful Faye Dunaway is and how her physical portrayal of Joan Crawford, like, she didn't look like a crazy bird.
Yeah, I'm
she
not...
She was technically a pretty woman, and, like, she looks ridiculous.
She made herself insane. Look at
Yeah.
Yeah, and I'm not a big Faye Dunaway fan anyway, honestly. I'm not, like, a big... I don't know. I just... anytime I see her in something, I'm just like, oh. Like...
Yeah.
Just because... I don't know. I mean, she may have been good in some movies, but especially stuff that she's done, like, in the later part of her career... You know, things that I would have seen. I don't know. I just don't think she's that good.
I never really cared for Faye Dunaway either, but at the same time, like, I think this movie might have... I know for a fact this movie hurt her career.
Yeah. Well, I can see how, like...
She sucks in it.
She does not suck in it. No, I disagree.
She is so over the top. She is eating every piece of the scenery.
She didn't have a director.
No.
No, the director...
The director didn't do anything.
I will say the director... should have pulled her back.
Yeah.
A lot.
Every scene.
Not every scene. I don't think every scene. I think, you know, trying to convey that manic personality.
Right.
You know, it takes a measured director to be able to do that. And there are moments in this when that's fine. You know, the one scene that we're going to get to that I think is the hallmark scene of this whole film is one of the best examples of the dynamic between Christina and Joan. I don't want to spoil it yet, but the point is, yes, I do think the director should have pulled her back in some of the scenes, especially like when she loses her shit over being let go by Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer and starts cutting up her rose garden and chopping down trees.
And waking the kids to like have them come help. That's so messed up.
Well, I don't deny that probably happened.
Oh, you know,
I haven't read the book.
Yeah.
But my point is that the way that is presented is way over the top.
Yeah.
You know, and maybe a better director would have been able to reel in that performance a bit more and make it a little bit more nuanced rather than just exploitative, which I think that is the word that a lot of people have used with this movie is that it is a little exploitative.
Including Faye Dunaway herself, right? Because she hates this movie, right?
I don't hate this movie. I actually like this movie.
I said she hates this movie. Yeah. Faye Dunaway does.
Yeah, she does. She won't talk about it.
Well, the thing is, they didn't realize that they had an unintentional comedy on their hands until like a month after it being released. They changed the tagline. So the movie said, come and see the biggest mother of them all. Because they decided, okay, we better treat this like a comedy because people are laughing at it.
Oh, wow. That's a shame.
Oh, wow. Wow, that's horrible.
Because this is a horrible movie.
Its subject matter is horrible. I don't think it's a horrible film. But so anyway, and getting back to the story of this film, we see that, you know, Christina is kind of being groomed as like her mother by proxy almost.
Oh, yeah.
And
she's not going to be allowed to be a vet.
Yeah. 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 So even when she's around these quote unquote uncles, which is horrible, like all these men that come in to go basically bang Joan Crawford, you know, she's told to call them Uncle so-and-so.
Yeah.
Uncle Greg and Uncle this and Uncle that. It's just really horrifying stuff. To put a kid through.
I love that when she's tending bar and she knows her mom's drinks of choice.
Yeah. But that's what I'm saying.
Is
it's
that
like,
gin or vodka, do you guys think? That she drinks this whole movie. Is it gin?
Gin. Yeah. Yeah. So you get moments like that, and then it really culminates with a number of scenes when she wins the Academy Award and then is told that she's too old, basically. And she's let go by MGM. She starts down a downward spiral in which she's trying to, like, you know, exercise and get herself in the best shape possible to prove that she's not old. And she walks in on Christina pretending to be her.
Yeah.
Playing pretend.
Yeah. Or just like, well, pretending, I think, just to to be getting an award of some kind. You know, she's in the mirror. She's just playing. She's just
pretending, like all little kids do.
Yeah, I don't even think she was trying to be her mom. No. I think she's just pretending to accept an
pretending.
Award.
She's just pretending. And she flips that, the shit switch. She literally loses her fucking mind.
And chops off all the child's hair.
Yes.
It's crazy.
And it's a really hard scene to watch. My wife and I are watching. She told me to turn it off. Because it's hard to watch.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And like that's not a wig. That's real hair being cut. Like you see them pulling. That's not a wig.
Oh, wow.
I mean, that was her real hair being cut. So you get moments like that, which are truly horrifying, that then you cut forward in time to, you know, the wire hanger scene.
Yeah, that's one of the more famous.
Which is one of the more famous.
This
ones.
Is what won the Razzies right here.
Yeah.
Amazing. Yeah, because this movie did win.
Do you want to talk a little bit about the wire hanger scene?
So the children are asleep and Joan.
She has a brother now. Like,
yeah,
she's
adopted
a second child.
Yeah, because, you know, that's a good idea.
Well, she had one. Why not get a second one?
Yeah, right.
And so she's in their room and she's looking at all these like really expensive clothes of, you know, the children's like the $300 dresses for Christina. And she.
And it's like one in the morning.
It's like late.
Yeah.
But she sees the one of the dresses. Or outfits or something is, you know, everything has like those padded hangers, like those old fashioned ones that are like fabric and they're like satin. So like shiny and like pretty. Like I have a few that I put like my suits on, but they're mostly those for children's clothes. And then she just happens to see one outfit on a wire hanger. And it just obviously came from the dry cleaner like that. Like that's what they use. Yeah. Like dry cleaners use wire hangers and it still even had the tag on it from the dry cleaner. But then, I mean, she just flips out and says that famous, you know, no wire hangers line.
Emma!
You know, so.
She starts beating her kid with a wire hanger.
Yeah. And that is like upsetting.
Yeah. And I mean.
Because like, because the kid didn't even put the hanger on. I mean, you know what I mean? Like the kid didn't do it.
No.
Go beat the dry cleaner.
Yeah. That would have been an amazing scene.
No, don't. I mean, don't beat the dry cleaner. That's terrible. No. But, you know.
Yeah, it's really disturbing to watch because, I mean, you can tell they're cutting to not a kid getting hit. Like when they're cutting these shots and you see that, you can clearly see that's a pad. Like, that's a pad with the same pajamas.
Right, right.
It's weird for this little actress.
Yeah, that'd be confusing.
But it is very horrifying.
Yeah.
And that's one of the main scenes that a lot of people, you know, they remark about Mommy Dearest, the wire hanger scene. But then it goes to, she starts to, again, a telltale sign of bipolar disorder. She starts to keep everything clean.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Everything must be clean. So they go into the bathroom. They start dumping the suds soap all over the floor to clean it.
Yeah, because it's not clean enough. Like, she didn't clean her bathroom clean, like, nice enough.
And it is really disturbing. And as I mentioned, you know, towards the tail end of this whole childhood section of the movie, you know, we do get that whole thing where she's, you know, calling all the guy's uncles. And she gets sent away to school because... she watches, I think Christina watches her mom with one of the guys.
She walks in on them,
Little hanky-panky.
Little hanky-panky. And, you know, Joan decides to send her to a boarding school.
Which, I mean, that's what you should do.
Which
just send your kid away.
Causes us to flash forward in time.
Yeah.
Now, I don't mind the transition.
Yeah, I mean, like, for these ones, I don't mind. But just when we went from scene to scene, even when she was all the same age, it was, like, jarring.
Well, it was a nice, the way they transition between... you know, little kid Christina to adult Christina was nice because they did a match cut. So they had the actress in the same position at the same look and they cut the shot.
Right.
You know, the
casting here.
The
was
casting was
really
spot on.
Good too.
And the way that they cast this was they cast the adult version of Christina first.
Oh,
and then they
cool.
then they cast the little girl.
That's smart.
And it actually does look like Christina Crawford if you look at the book cover.
Oh, really?
Of Mommy Dearest.
Yeah.
Ooh, I'm going to look at her face.
Yeah. So, you know, We flash forward to the future. This is the time when Christina's a teenager and she's at the Chadwick School. She's studying acting. And, you know, her and her mom, they don't have the best relationship, but ultimately they're still somewhat, you know, mother-daughter, kind of close. You know, and at this point, Joan has remarried.
Because of course she has.
Because of course she has. She married Al Steele, who's like, I guess
the Pepsi kingpin,
which I'm like, soft drink companies have kingpins. Okay. that's a cool thing, I guess.
John called him every soda pop name under the sun while we were watching it.
Yeah. And while Christina's at school, she gets caught basically canoodling with the boy.
Oh, yeah.
The stables.
Just getting some smoochy face.
Rolling the hay.
Exactly. Good one. And this kind of causes Joan to come in and accuse the school of, you know, basically fostering a brothel, as she says. And, you know, blames the school, blames Christina, because she has to pull her back out. And this leads into one of, I would say, the best scene in the film. Okay? And that's the confrontation between a mother who is insane and a daughter who has had a fucking enough of it. Okay? All right. So to set the stage of this scene here, Joan is driving Christina back from the Chadwick School. That's the boarding school that she was at. And it's telling her that she has a reporter there from Red Book. The actress who plays this reporter is actually Marlon Brando's sister, believe it or not.
Which is far out.
Which is really
far out.
That's
crazy. I didn't know that.
And when you look at her, you're like, yeah, I could see it. I could see the Brando in there. And, you know, at this time, you know, Christina is pretty much distraught because of the fact that she's been caught by her mom and, you know, doesn't want to even be in her house. You know, this is really a tense scene that, honestly, this scene makes the whole movie, in my opinion. So, you know, they go back to the house and Joan, you know, is trying to put on that veneer of the Hollywood, you know, actress, blah, blah, blah. Porter's like, you know, here's the title of my piece. It's going to be called Hollywood Starlet, who managed to have family and, you know, wealth and, you know, work and all that stuff. Have it all, basically. Mm-hmm. And that's perfect because in like 5 seconds, it all changes. Because Joan says that Christina got expelled. And Christina says that's a lie.
Yeah.
And that's that right there, you know, Joan flips her head and is like, how dare you question me in front of a reporter?
That's like a big thing with her character, too, like, is how dare you?
Yes.
I feel like that's like a big ego
thing. And you can see at this point that the cracks are forming. Of a major league conflict is going to like boil over.
Well, she's finally learning to stand up.
And
to
that's the point.
The psychotic bird woman.
Yeah. Because up until this point, Christina has always been at the behest of her mother. She's always, yes, mommy dearest, that sort of thing. Yeah, she's under utter torment from this woman. Yeah, but it isn't until this scene when she decides to fight back.
And that's where the title comes from, because she can't just call her mommy. It has to be mommy dearest.
No, it has to be a creepy fucking thing like mommy dearest.
It's weird.
So, you know, Joan moves her to the next room and says, we're going to have a conversation. And the conversation that ensues is, it first starts with, you know, Christina saying, why did you adopt me? Which, that's the question that, you know, I think it's a valid question to ask. And her mom's like, how dare you ask me that question? And she's like, why did you adopt me? And ultimately, Christina believes it's for publicity.
Right.
Which, she's partially right.
Yeah.
It was.
It extended her career.
It extended her career because she had a family now. And even Joan makes mention of that. Maybe I did it for a little publicity. But she says that she wanted a child. And this then, you know, leads into the bigger argument, which is that Joan just wants Christina to give her the same respect that anyone off the street, all of her fans, all that people, give her the same amount of respect. Oh my gosh, Joan Crawford. And she can never get it from Christina. And Christina comes back with the best line in the whole movie, in my opinion, which is, I am not one of your fans.
Yeah, and that's like, I thought that was like one of the brighter moments of this film.
That is the best line, because that is the crux of the whole movie right there, is that the fans see this side of Joan Crawford. She wants them to. But Christina sees the real Joan Crawford. Mm-hmm. And does not respect her, does not like her. And that leads into Joan Crawford attacking her daughter.
Yeah.
Like physically attacking her.
Oh, yeah.
Trying to strangle her.
Again.
You know, like literally physically trying to kill her.
She's right in there. She has her hands on her throat.
Yeah, this is what, attack scene 30?
Child abuse. Seriously, she's got after this poor girl.
Yeah, yeah, and it takes two people to pull her off.
Like you do.
Yeah. It takes two people to pull her off. Christina gets sent to a nunnery school.
Yeah. Oh, man.
She's got to find Jeebus, you know what
she's
I mean?
She's got to find that Jeebus.
She just needs some Jesus.
And, you know, as we said, you know, Joan gets married to the Pepsi kingpin. And ultimately decides to move all of her life to New York and build an mm-hmm. apartment in New York. And mm-hmm. you get the
most expensive apartment ever.
Seriously. Dude, and saying weird things like, let's knock down this barren wall. And I'm like, that's a barren wall. You can't really knock that down. Like, yeah. That's got to be there.
There goes the whole structure.
Listen, yeah. I've watched enough HDTV to know you can take it down, but you got to put a beam up. Or columns. Gotta take that weight.
Drew.
Okay.
Or Jonathan.
Okay.
Your property brothers.
Yeah, your property brothers.
Hey,
yeah.
You know what? I know a little bit about houses. I'm not going to apologize for the knowledge. So, you guys can suck it.
It's fine. Two tears in a bucket.
So ultimately, you know, Al, the Pepsi kingpin guy, you get the feeling that he is more sympathetic to Christina than Joan is.
Although
he
you could
sees
say,
the crazy. He's not stupid he sees or the crazy. Blind.
No. Or you could say he was infantilizing her.
Oh my God. This was my night last night, Brian.
Oh God.
I guess he was barksing up the wrong tree.
He literally did this.
Yeah. So ultimately, you know, they build this apartment and Al dies. Believe it or not. He dies and This gets, again,
did
one of the...
Did he die or go flat?
Oh, come on, man. You can't say that.
He was a real person, John.
He was a real person, exactly. So he dies, and, you know, ultimately there is another great scene, which is, you know, Joan Crawford dealing with the board of Pepsi.
Oh, yeah. Oh,
as
man.
Only her batshit
crazy could.
Oh, my God.
And you know, she says to them, you know, that you're not going to push me out. And says, like, this isn't my first day at the radio. Rodeo.
Oh, my God.
And he's like, woman, you're insane. Like, and they even realize, like, she's fucking nuts.
Could you imagine just looking at the past records of the board of trustees of Pepsi? It's like, wait, Joan Crawford?
Yeah.
What?
Yeah, how'd she do that one?
Yeah.
So yeah, you know, Joan basically muscles herself in on the board of Pepsi. Christina's left the Christian nunnery and has now gone into trying to get into acting.
And she's gonna do soaps.
She is successful at soaps, but her mom is unwilling to help her financially out the entire time. And so she's struggling, you know, which I'm like, you wouldn't help your kid out. It's not like you don't have the money. Like, what the hell?
Well, she also tells her, like, hey, we're really broken. I have to, like, sending you to a shitty boarding school or whatever because we don't have any money. And then later she sees her mom bought like 30 pairs of shoes.
Yeah.
So they don't have any money issues.
Yeah, you know? They don't have any money issues. She just doesn't want to give her any. Yeah. Like, she just doesn't. Because
so she lies to her.
She lies to her, yeah. And so ultimately what ends up happening is, you know, Christina's on the soap opera, does really well, and, you know, she suffers a ovarian tumor.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and she's taken out of the soap while that's happening and instead and I had to realize because I was watching this, I'm like, why would they just suddenly like pinch hit her mom in on this? Yeah. And I realized because back in the day they did soaps live. Like, this was a live thing. This was this was done live every day.
Oh yeah. I think they still are. Like, I mean, the schedule soaps? For soaps is pretty brutal. They say that that's actually a good way to like get your feet wet, either directing or acting, because the work is so intensive. Like, you're working every day.
Yeah.
Now, I don't know if it's live to tape for that day. Like, they may do the day before or something like that in case something happens, but it's a grueling schedule. They record like 5-6 days a week, I think.
Yeah. Hold on a second. Okay. I'm just hearing it on my speaker and my headphones here. Yeah. So ultimately what ends up happening is Joan ends up replacing her daughter,
which is on weird. The soap. I didn't understand that at all.
Because the character her daughter was playing is like 28 years old, and the mom is
like 900
at this point, and a drunk.
Yeah.
Like, she's visibly drunk and can't say her lines.
Yeah.
You know?
Anna Nicole style, baby.
Yeah, seriously.
Anna Nicole.
Seriously, like major league. And, you know, completely embarrasses, you know, Christina again, this time nationally. You know, and shortly after this, you know, Joan gets an award. They don't say it's the Academy Award or anything like that. Just say it's another award. And
I think for being not dead, you
for
know,
for being
I mean?
Not
like, you're
dead,
still
yeah.
not
well, it's
dead.
Like one of those like honorary things, yeah. right? Like a lifetime achievement or whatever.
Yeah. And at this point, you know, she also, you realize she's sick from cancer
mm-hmm.
and she eventually dies from it in 1977.
Mm-hmm.
And this then leads to a scene, which again is, this is all featured in the book. Where Christina and Christopher learn that their mother had written them out of the will
mm-hmm.
and left them with nothing.
What
and
a shitty
said,
thing to do.
And actually said in the will, they are getting nothing because of actions that they are aware of.
Yeah. Wow. What a shitty thing to do.
Like, you can tell that Christina wrote this book because, like, the brother is so secondary and is written out of half of the movie.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And then we never get an explanation why the brother is written out of the will because
yeah.
Christina only cared about what happened to her. Like, well, the brother is like, why was he written out?
Well,
oh, wait,
I imagine
you.
The book does yeah. probably spell more into that.
Well,
right.
The book came out in 78, like the year after Joan yes. Crawford died. So, I mean, Christina had to have been working on this for a while.
Probably.
Well, interestingly, the movie was distributed by Paramount, the only studio Joan never worked for.
Ah.
There you go.
There's probably, that's yeah, probably all the other ones were like, no, we're not doing
we're not touching
Joan's
this.
Legacy.
That's interesting,
yeah.
though.
But yeah, and then the movie just ends.
It just
like
ends
with her
yeah,
crying.
It does.
And it's like, wow, that was a feel good
well,
movie.
Well, it ends with her saying that she's not going to get the final word,
yeah.
which she doesn't. And
yeah.
I would say that Christina did get the final word because, as we said at the start of the episode, no one knows of Joan Crawford now for being the big star. They know her for being a child abuser.
Yeah. Oscar winner.
Oscar winning child abuser.
Yeah.
Yeah,
that's about
not
it.
That's not her legacy. Oscar winner's not her legacy. It's crazy
child abuse.
Woman, child
crazy
abuser.
Woman.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, if she was a child abuser, isn't that what we should remember her for? I mean, there's a lot of things that I think, you know, get thrown under the rug, like when someone's famous, you know.
Absolutely. We're not going to remember Harvey Weinstein, producer of Pulp Fiction.
No.
We're right.
remember Harvey Weinstein, sex pest, you know, sex pervert. Yeah.
Yeah, but, you know, but what's interesting to me is, like, in some cases, we remember Michael Jackson, dancer and singer. Not fiddler of children.
Yes. Yeah. Well, that is because people don't want to
right.
believe that.
Right.
People yeah. do not. I watched that documentary. Did you watch that documentary?
No, not yet.
It's
no,
hard.
Yeah,
it's really hard to watch. But I think especially with Michael Jackson, people for some reason are unwilling to even entertain the belief that they're the person that they looked up to, the person who did a lot of good things for you know, homeless kids and people in general, could be a horrible human being and could be manipulative. Because especially with that documentary, like I watched both parts of it, and the biggest takeaway I got from it was not necessarily that he was a kiddie diddler, because I kind of already figured that.
Yeah, you don't get accused of that twice.
You don't get accused of that twice.
You know, nobody's ever accused
no.
me of fucking a kid.
Or falsely accused of that twice,
yeah.
I guess
yeah.
is what
you,
we're trying
you,
to say.
You don't get accused that many times and there not be a shred of truth
right.
somewhere in there. So it was not that shocked me. It was the level of manipulation and the level of brainwashing that he did
wow.
to these kids who grew up and to the families of these kids who grew up and how much they drank the Kool-Aid to the point where they literally were doing his bidding.
Wow.
Like the kids that they interviewed, the two that they interviewed, the one who went on to be the main choreographer for NSYNC and Britney Spears, he detailed how he really believed that he had a relationship with Michael Jackson and literally believed that he was protecting Michael Jackson, even though he knew that what they were doing was inappropriate. He didn't believe it was inappropriate. He believed it was love. So, and that shows a level of manipulation and brainwashing that I don't think a lot of people quite understand. And I was completely shocked by it because he wasn't the only one saying that. The other person they interviewed said the same thing. And the families were like, I mean, you could blame the families, and I partially do. You know,
well, he gave us $1 million and a llama, but, so we just turned the other cheek.
Right. Well, I mean, but that's an interesting callback then to this film, where a lot of her close associates couldn't believe that Joan Crawford would be this abusive.
No, and that's the thing with that Michael Jackson documentary. I mean, you know, it really was the amount of brainwashing. It really was how manipulated these people were.
Yeah,
that they were completely I would say they were taken advantage of, you know, by a devious human being, you know, and the sad truth of it is that there is still a lot of people who take his side.
Yeah, which I think it's important in this case that
I want to listen to Thriller and I don't want to be judged.
Exactly.
Well, I mean, and it's important in this case where Joan Crawford was outed as being an abusive person and an alcoholic, you know, so that, you know, we can talk about these issues, you know, obviously, you know, something like alcoholism you can go into recovery for, but, you know, the abuse of children, like, people need to know that. Like, that's important.
My only question is just coming back to your point, John, and, you know, why is it that we believe that Christina was abused by Joan Crawford, but don't believe Michael Jackson?
I know. It's because people are challenged by it and uncomfortable with it, I think.
Yeah.
You know, this movie, sometimes Mark Twain once said that the difference between reality and fiction is that fiction has to have rules.
Yeah, that's true.
And I think that, like, this movie is laughable because it's so outrageous, but the problem is that it actually did happen. But, you know, it's hard to watch this and take it seriously, even though it probably all is true.
Well,
but it's just like, this is so ridiculous. And the fact that it is missing a narrative structure and it is just like, let's move on to the next scene of child abuse.
Well,
it's
and when
laughable.
You pair it with this performance by Faye Dunaway, which was extremely misguided and directed poorly, I mean, she is insane. Like, she's, you know, she's not this. I'd be curious to know in a different director's hands how this could have been different.
Yeah. My only thing is I would have liked to have seen how other movies that Joan Crawford was in were reflected in this. Like, for instance, like, she had a little bit of a resurgence with Whatever Happened to Baby Jane.
Right. Yeah. Right.
With her rival Bette Davis.
I know. Well, they did the movie about that too, didn't they?
Yeah, but
they did a TV
series.
Yeah, from the American Horror Story guy.
What I meant. Like, they made a piece of art about their relationship and feud and them doing this film, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but it, like, I would have liked to have seen how that played out in this too, to see if there was, you know, like, getting those little bits, because I mean they did have like the Oscar for Mildred Pierce and that was great, but they never really talked anymore about like her actual career. Yeah. You know, and my only guess is that they just didn't have the money to film it. This movie was made with only $5 million.
Yeah.
And it was a small budget.
It made like $30 million or something like that.
It made a pretty decent amount.
By 1981 standards, that's pretty good.
Yeah.
It made a profit.
It made $39 million. So on a $5 million budget, which that's pretty good.
That was a lot of money
back then. That's a lot of money
especially.
Back then. So, I mean, it was, for the most part, well received. I just think, you know, as you said, you know, you needed a director to pull back.
It just seemed so over the top. And like I said, missing the narrative structure, it was just like, here's a collection of child abuse clips. It was almost like a best of child violence.
Yeah.
And I mean, it was clear what she was trying to get across. I mean, Brian, you hit all the notes. Like, oh, she was overly competitive with her own child. We watched her deterioration. Like, the movie makes those points clear, but it's not done with a deft hand. And I think that's why people laugh so heartily at this movie. And, you know, I guess we would, this is more of like, I'd say one of our holiday offerings, but it does fall under I think the pantheon of utter shit.
Oh yeah.
I don't agree with that.
I did not think that you were going to love this movie.
I didn't think you liked it either, Brian.
I like this movie a lot. I don't think it's a pantheon, though. I've seen worse films.
Or the movie we're going to talk about next week.
Yes, absolutely. That is an abomination.
Yeah.
You know, I I think that it tries really hard to showcase child abuse. Like, that is what it's trying to do. It's trying to showcase this child abuse. It's trying to showcase, in 1981 terms, that this is horrible. You don't put a kid through this. I think that in trying to do that, it does run the danger of being exploitative. It does run that. There are some scenes in this movie where I'm like, do you need to languish on that for that long?
Mm-hmm.
You know?
I could see that.
A wire hanger scene especially, like, they hang on that. The hair cutting scene, they hang on that for a while. And I keep going like, did you really need to hang on that scene?
Christina was on set, and she probably was in the director's ear like, no, you need to show all that for a
while. Was she on set?
Yeah. I imagine she was.
Well, she wrote a book about it because she said Faye Dunaway was mean to her.
I wouldn't be surprised. It's Faye Dunaway after all. But
Faye E. Dearest by Christina Crawford.
Yeah, I don't think this is a bad movie. I just think that it was, as I said, one of the first movies to be about a Hollywood icon in a negative light. Can you think of any other movie prior to this that was about a Hollywood icon that was negative?
Well, you look at a movie like Sunset Boulevard, but that's not a real person.
No.
Yeah.
That's my point.
You
is,
mean like an actual
like this
biopic.
Is an actual biopic. Because you look at movies that have come out now, like you look at like the Ray Charles movie, Ray, and you even look at like the Johnny Cash movie, Walk the Line. You know, those are movies.
And Johnny Cash was a piece of shit.
He was a piece of shit.
But they just portray him as such a cool, wonderful guy.
Well, they did portray him as a piece of shit, too. They just didn't make him that big of a piece of shit.
Right.
Yeah. You know? So, like, you look at those movies that are kind of commonplace, have kind of dropped off since then. But, like, Mommy Dearest was really kind of the first of those types of movies that tried to portray reality of this real person. And I think that there are some moments where it's successful. I think showcasing how horrible the child abuse was, they were, but I do think that they went a little over the top at some moments of it.
You know, the thing is, like, obviously I know why they didn't, because it would have made 1/16 of the money, but this would have been a better documentary.
Oh,
yeah. Because it would have been more believable
take it in.
But, I mean, nobody goes to see documentary, especially 1981.
I was
going to
say back then, like, the documentary would not have been successful, I feel. Yeah.
But I don't think it's a pantheon. I don't think it's a bad movie.
It's hard to watch.
I think it's really difficult to watch.
Mostly
because... Because
Faye
it's real.
So bad in it.
Well, I don't think Faye's bad in it. I think that Faye is unbound. I think that's what it is. It's Faye Dunaway being Faye Dunaway, just as the same as when you watch
Nick
Jack
Cage
Nichol-
and Vampire's Kiss.
Wow.
I fucking love that movie. Don't you be besmirching Nick Cage and Vampire's Kiss.
He directed himself.
I don't give a shit.
The director quit the movie and he just directed himself.
Oh my God,
I don't give a shit. Okay. I don't give a shit. I love that movie. I don't care. I don't care. It, you know, Peter Lowe as a fucking vampire? Hilarious.
Okay? Oh my God.
Fucking hilarious. Okay? But I think this is a perfect example of what happens when you have an actress portraying another actress and not being pulled back. I think that's the biggest criticism, is not necessarily the movie itself. It's not having a great director who can really help the actress in it, you know, fine tune the role.
Sure.
You know, I don't know what went behind the scenes. I don't know if they were just like, yeah, the studio wants more of an exploitative film rather than a true biopic.
Right.
But I think what you've got here is a clear example of trying to showcase this actress's life as it actually was, you know?
Yeah.
And taking Christina Crawford's word for it. So, yeah.
Yeah.
That's Mommy Dearest.
Yeah, and I feel like this is a big one, like, for cultural, like, pop culture references and touch points. This is one of those films that once you see it, you're like, oh! And you, like, kind of get little jokes that you've been exposed to before, you know?
So I guess what we're saying is, call your mothers up today.
Because
say, Mom,
she might beat you with wire
go
hangers.
Go fuck yourself. You beat me with wire hangers, you bitch.
No, go take your mom.
So that's
what
you're gonna be telling your mom about that.
Yeah, yeah. Fuck that bitch.
Take your mom to brunch. And hey, if your relationship with your own mom is fraught, like Christina Crawford's was, that's okay too. You know, spend it with someone you love, or just take care of yourself today. You know. Looking out for everybody who can't spend any time with their mom today for a myriad of reasons.
Either that or just say, well, you know what? My mom might not be the greatest person, but at least she isn't Joan Crawford crazy.
Hey, yeah. You know, whatever gets you through the day.
What's great, my mom doesn't listen to this show, so I can say anything I want about Jan.
That's true. That's true.
Look, you old bitch.
Oh, God.
You old
Next
bitch.
Time I see him, I'm kicking you right in the taco.
You know what's going to happen,
you
right?
Fuck me up.
You know what's going to happen, right?
She's gonna
Lane's
going
to message your mom and say, I think you should listen to this episode.
Oh, I'll listen to it with her.
Yeah.
I'll sit down.
No,
with
then
her.
Elaine will give about 45 instructions on how to find this show, and she still won't.
It's fine.
I don't understand the internet.
She's not great with technology. It's
not
true.
Great with the technology.
Pretty safe. You're pretty safe, John.
Awesome. So, happy Mother's Day to everyone out there. John, where can they find you at on the Twitter machine?
The Unreal J Wolves.
Lane?
LA_Croft.
You can find me at Brian Kytos on the Psycho Show page. Be sure to like us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and at, I was going to say Google Plus, but that's gone now, at Psycho Show. You can also find us on the Epicast Network at epicastnetwork.com. If you have a favorite movie or question you want to throw away, you want to tell us how you have wire hangers in your closet, you can contact us at the Epicast Network. You also make sure to subscribe to us on Apple Podcasts and iTunes, and we will see you next time.
No, Mommy. No more spankings.
Epicast.